You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation, and welcome to your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every game, news item, rumor, and more. Thank you for subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or on Himalaya. My name is David Mill. This is it. Today's the day. The regular season began in actuality on Tuesday, but who cares about that? For Heat fans around the world, today marks the official beginning of a new era. I think I speak for a lot of you here by saying that this is a very exciting and what looks like a really fun season, the start of something really great. Thank you again for listening and being a part of this journey with me, and I hope to keep making it a really good one for all of you. I know I ask for this a lot, but please, please leave a review, send an email, use smoke signals, whatever works to let me know what's working or not so that we can make this the best season of Locked On Heat ever. I know that's a big challenge for me personally, but I'm hoping to get your help as much as possible so that we can work on this together and really improve this listening experience for all of you. I wanted to do a season preview-ish type thing, but the reality is that I have written about it or talked about it what feels like a million times already, and in truth, there's no way of really knowing what's going to happen. You know, some players will take a leap, some players won't. Jimmy Butler is the team's go-to player, obviously, and how everybody else fits around him. These are the storylines that we all know we can expect out of this upcoming season. Injuries, etc., will somehow affect how the season plays out. And just like the rest of you, I have to watch and just figure out what's happening the best I can. So there's no real way of predicting what's going to happen. I've seen some people predict as many as 50 wins for this team, which I think is closer to the reality. Others, including some people at ESPN, under 40. That's a huge variance there. And I think a lot of that has to do with the unpredictability of Jimmy Butler, of how everybody's going to mesh alongside him, the fact that a lot of these young players have not proven it at a huge level yet. And so I think that's where you really have to start kind of taking a step back. As much as we all want this to be a really successful season, I'm not sure that we're going to get it exactly the way we want it to be, because the reality is that a lot of people think that there might be some things wrong here. I happen to be one of the ones that disagree with that assessment. I think the pieces are all there. I think the change in the culture is there. I think there's a lot of good things, mostly that we've seen out of the preseason. And so I'm optimistic. And so let's see what happens. Let's watch it play out. But either way, I did want to do something a little different. And so, because this is a big day, because this is the start of something fun, I wanted to preview the season by talking about three things that I think will make this season a very successful one. Three reasons why it might be an unsuccessful one. And then finally, three things that I personally want to see happen. I know maybe that's a little monopolizing of it, of me. You know, I'm trying to take advantage here. But there are things that I want to look out for over the course of the season that I'm hoping a lot of you will as well, and I just want to present that for you. So let's get started. I'm going to go ahead and start with the unsuccessful list first. Let's get that bad stuff out of the way, get the juju out of there, and just move on to the good stuff. Because to me, what makes this season, or what could make this season unsuccessful, is not just about wins or losses. Like, it would be somewhat catastrophic for them to win under 40 games or under 35 games, for them to completely fall apart and not make the playoff race. Some people have them as a fringe playoff team. I don't see it that way personally, again, but a lot of people do. And so, again, the wins or losses may not necessarily change or dictate how you view this season as an unsuccessful one. To me, it's more about what you look at what Miami did over the offseason and what many people expect them to accomplish this season. And what is the exact opposite of that? What are the worst possible storylines for this season and how that plays out? And so that's, to me, how I view what would make this a very unsuccessful season for Miami. So first and foremost, let's get into it. A major regression from Jimmy Butler. I think if there's any huge concern among national media, it's that we don't know what Jimmy Butler is going to be like in these circumstances. In Chicago, he had his own team, much like he did in Miami. That's fine. But it was also a team that drafted him, among Derrick Rose and Joakim Noah and Luol Deng and others, where Jimmy had to work his way up from that. And one of the things that we talked about when Casey Johnson of the Chicago Tribune, I forget now where he's moved on, but he's no longer with the Chicago Tribune. Either way, he covered Jimmy during his early years there with the Bulls. And one of the things that he said really stood out was that, you know, Jimmy worked his way up from the mailroom to get to the point where he was the best player on this team because Derrick Rose was dealing with his injury issues. He was no longer the MVP type player that he was in 2010-11, etc. And Jimmy slowly but surely became the best player on this team, but he was still viewed as this guy who shouldn't have been. He was a mailroom clerk that worked his way up to the top that was still viewed as a mailroom clerk. And that kind of lack of respect or lack of, I don't know, giving him his just due for having worked his way up there really stuck in his craw a lot. And to me, that's different than what he is now. Now, this is his real opportunity to build on something. He's no longer with an underwhelming cast of talented players like he was in Minnesota. He's no longer in Philadelphia with really talented players that maybe he was just kind of trying to figure his way out. This is different. This is him clearly at the top, his team, his rules, his way. And he can mess this all up in an instant. He could be the version of Jimmy that we feared might come here from Minnesota or from Philadelphia, although I think he got along mostly well in Philadelphia. But I think that a regression from Jimmy where he is, I don't even know if a locker room cancer is just right, but just an antagonistic dick. There's no way around it. I'm at a loss for words here, and I'm sorry about that. But the reality is that if he's just constantly pushing and poking and prodding and testing his limits there and just making everybody feel uncomfortable. I probably said this on a podcast before, but somebody I had worked with many, many years ago told me something very intelligent, which was there were two types of leaders, ones that bring people together and unite everybody and try to get the most out of everybody that way, and others that create chaos and see how everybody responds. And I think Jimmy's in that latter category. It's not something that I respond to. I think there are other players around the league that probably don't respond to it either, but I think there's a lot of guys in Miami that probably will, and I'm curious to see if Jimmy, you know, maybe we've overstated as a national media, maybe we've overstated that he fits into that latter category. Maybe he can bring everybody together, but either way, a major regression from him would be just buying into that completely, where he just attacks everybody, where he just goes to the media and just creates all these really angry feelings in a locker room that has been very, very cohesive for the most part over the last 3 years. With all the issues with Hassan Whiteside and the fact that Richardson and Josh Richardson and Justice Winslow or whoever didn't excel as leaders during the 41 and 41 season, all this stuff that you can say everything you want to about Miami, for the most part, almost 90% of the time, that locker room was a cohesive workplace. If Jimmy goes in there and ruins all that, the season is a wash. I'm not just a wash. It's ruined. That's the exact opposite of what we expected from Jimmy. Like, we've all given him the benefit of the doubt because we like seeing him show up at 3:30 a.m. At least from a Miami perspective, a Miami fan perspective, you like seeing that. Like, is it pushing it? Is it going too far? Is it really unnecessary? Probably. But the reality is, you want to see your guys work. You want to see everybody else kind of build alongside that. And that's the kind of thing that gives everybody optimism, or it has given everybody optimism this preseason. If Jimmy goes against that and just trashes, I don't know, Goran Dragic and punches, you know, Derrick Jones Jr. in the face because he doesn't try hard enough on defense, or he gets into it with Justice Winslow on, you know, out of bounds timeout or something like that. You know, who knows? There could be a million different ways that we see it all play out. They don't all have to involve a practice session that's, you know, leaked out to the media where he takes a bunch of scrubs and beats up Bam Adebayo, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll see what happens. To me, that would be the absolute worst thing that could happen as far as this season. It would make it the most unsuccessful of any potential storyline. Another thing that I can see is another year of incredible mediocrity. And again, wins and losses are one way of determining what's mediocre or what's not, especially when it comes to the NBA. But at the same time, I think, like, you just want to be able to see something out of this team. And if you're just seeing more of the same, that Jimmy is just a slightly more effective and aggressive version of Josh Richardson, and that we don't see any kind of substantial growth around the roster, and that it's just a style of play that's boring, that doesn't really have any kind of clearly defined identity or anything like that, and that we're just starting to see more of the same stuff, and somehow we peter out to a 40 and 42 record. Again, not necessarily just wins and losses, but just the fact that we're boring and fun, not fun to watch, and that we don't do anything differently than what we've done over the past couple of seasons, then what the hell's the point? Like, you go for a player like Jimmy Butler, you take your chances with his type of personality because you want to see something good out of this team. And if you don't get that, then what the hell's the point? What are you rebuilding for? I've long said that I'm okay with not just their mediocrity, but I want to see young players like Josh and Justice and Bam continue to grow and develop. You kind of you alter that course by trading Josh Richardson away and acquiring Jimmy Butler. Now you're on a different track, and this is a more, well, you're looking to be more successful and have a clear definition, one that's led by a superstar, with the hope that either another superstar will emerge internally or that you acquire another one via trade at some point down the road. We can't see that right now. We can't see if Bradley Beal is available in a year or Victor Oladipo is available at some point. We don't know who's going to be available, and we don't know if Miami's going to make a move. We assume that they will because that's who they've always been. But at the same time, we want to see some growth this year. And if we don't, I just don't know. I don't know how we can accept this team if it just doesn't seem like it's anywhere better than what it was over the last few seasons. And part of that is my third reason why this could be a very unsuccessful team is a lack of growth from Justice, Bam Adebayo, and Tyler Hero. Now, I included Tyler Hero here because even though we don't have any sample size other than Summer League in the preseason, which let's throw that out right now because we don't know what to expect out of Tyler Hero. Like, we have all pinned our hopes on him. I think a lot of our listeners, my listeners, are really expecting great things out of Tyler. And we love his shooting. We love his confidence. We love his brash nature where he took it to Michael Carter Williams. All these kinds of things that make him really exciting and fun. Jimmy loves his attitude, etc. Now, if he goes out there, and I don't know if he's necessarily... Let's see. He can't just be a bust because, you know, there are less expectations for him. But at the same time, like, if he's timid out there, if he can't get the pace, if he turns the ball over a lot, if that shot falls below 30%, then you have some concerns here because a lot of people view him as a future piece of this team, one that was theoretically untouchable or untradeable. And if he shows a major regression from what we think he can be, then that changes things for Miami because at the very least you want him to develop to a point where, again, he could be another building block in addition to Jimmy Butler and whomever else you acquire as a superstar down the road. But if he doesn't make that growth, then at least he can be a complementary role player. But if he regresses and he struggles and he's a long-term project where it takes him 5 years to figure out his place in the NBA, then that's tough. As far as Justice and Bam are concerned, I think that's a little bit more obvious. Like, we need to see a leap up from them. And talking to some people around the league and the expectations for this team, we all know what Jimmy can be. We expect Jimmy to be very good. But we need to see some growth from Justice Winslow. He needs to emerge as not just a starting point guard because that job is his, but a good one. He has the defense. He has the passing chops. He needs to be a consistent scorer, a threat that somebody can be like, well, you know what? At almost 13 points per game with about 6 or 7 assists per game and 5 rebounds per game, this is a guy that can do everything really well in addition to playing defense at a high level. So we need to see that from him. From Bam, I want to see some confidence in his shot. I want to see him taking 18-footers. I want to see an average of 1 3-point attempt per game. I don't think we're going to see that, but that needs to be where his shooting is at in order for us to see this is a viable floor spacer down the road. Look, you've got floor spacing bigs and Myers Leonard and Kelly Olynyk. Bam needs to be there. Like, he has strengths in that he can bring the ball up. He's a good playmaker. He can, you know, work in the low post. But at the same time, he needs to be a little bit better as a floor spacer. So I want to see more confidence from him where he's able to shoot from the mid-range or from the perimeter. And that, to me, is what would make him much better as far as a player is concerned. And if he doesn't show that growth, then we're looking at the season and wondering what the hell it's all about, because then you have questions about this overpaid superstar Jimmy Butler with nobody else to build around him, and all these players will in turn lose value that you cannot include in trades for another superstar player. So if Justice doesn't show any growth, then what are you going to get in exchange for Justice Winslow? What are you going to get in exchange for Bam Adebayo if he just shows out to be an athletic rebounder that can bring the ball up on occasion? Coming up next, what are the things that will make this season a very good one? I'll answer that next. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Indochino is the world's largest made-to-measure menswear brand. Start your style upgrade now with $30 off your total purchase of $399 or more at Indochino.com when entering Locked On at checkout. I'll give you my own personal wish list for the season in the next segment, but first, we went through what could ruin everything this season, but what would make it a super successful one? And this is tough because, like the other segment, it's not just about wins or losses. It's about changing narratives here with this team, especially on a national level. Like, if anything, over the course of the offseason, we saw that national media types don't always know the nuances of this team. Is Justice Winslow a point guard? How could he say he wants to handle the point? Those kinds of things. So we need to change narratives on a national level, and what would change the narrative the most is Jimmy Butler having an MVP-level type season. I think he doesn't have to be the MVP because I think that's a little unrealistic, but MVP seasons, by and large, are based on narratives. You get Russell Westbrook's triple-double. You get James Harden doing things that a lot of people haven't seen in NBA, or has no one seen in NBA history. You get LeBron James carrying a team. You get Derrick Rose not being LeBron James as he was in 2011. And all those kinds of things kind of buy into it because media are people with opinions and those opinions matter. And then you start to see over the course of the season, these opinions build and grow and take a life or an organic life of their own. And that's how you frame an MVP consideration. And for Jimmy, we're working on the baseline of him being a real jerk and a potentially cancerous locker room presence where he can throw everybody off. And this, an MVP level type season, would be the exact opposite. For Philly fans, they've been incredibly critical of Jimmy Butler because, he made the statement when he first joined the 76ers that he was all about winning. Well, they've argued that he's all about winning, but on his own terms, and not really winning all that much because Miami isn't that good of a team in comparison to perhaps a more talented 76ers roster. But I think an MVP-level season would put him in some serious consideration and would validate his decision to come to Miami. It's not just, it doesn't look like it's as egocentric. It's about winning, but being a better version of the player that we saw in Philadelphia or Minnesota or even in Chicago. And if he can go into that point where he's averaging 27 points per game, 25, 27 points per game, playing all level defense, assisting at least five times a game, somewhere around there, providing clutch winning moments, I think those kinds of things would really be a significant narrative push around the country and from national media types and would really, again, validate the reasons why Jimmy came to Miami. Maybe it's wrong to look for that external validation, but again, we're talking about how Jimmy's decision to come to Miami was viewed, and a lot of people kind of went, why, when you could get a lot of money to contend for a title in Philadelphia, would you potentially go to a Miami team that maybe might be a little bit more mediocre? And then you see the waking up at 3:30 a.m. with Myers Leonard and Tyler Hero and wondering, well, is that really necessary? Is this just Jimmy being an acerbic jerk again? And all these things matter. But if he is putting up these kinds of numbers and he's carrying this team to, let's say, closer to 50 wins, and he is doing everything he can to push this team deep into the playoffs, and he is changing the way people view him as not just a potentially bad presence in the locker room, but somebody who makes other players around him better, things of that sort, who works together to win, to improve as a group and not just because of his own individual numbers, things of that sort. I think that would change so much about why he came to Miami, the view of why he came to Miami, of Jimmy as a person, as an individual, and Miami's future in general, because I don't think Jimmy's as bad as people have made it out to be. I think he can be eccentric. I think he can push people in a way that maybe they don't want to be pushed, but he got along with very talented teammates when he was in Philadelphia. He got along with them when he was in Team USA. He can get along with people that try their hardest when they push themselves to beyond normal limits because that's the expectation that he has out of everybody. So for me, if he's able to enjoy this season and grow as an individual and carry this team to something special, then that really changes a lot about how people view him. And that to me would make it incredibly successful, because then we're not just a mediocre team that has a Jimmy Butler. We're a team that really believes in Jimmy, and that Jimmy believes in as well, and that grow together into something really special. And that's what you want out of a basketball team. So the other thing that I think would make this a really successful season is to establish a clear identity. I'm noticing now these kind of mirror what I talked about in the previous segment, you know, regression from Jimmy, an MVP level from Jimmy, you know, another year of incredible mediocrity, and in this case, to establish a clear identity. I think we've looked at what's gone on over the last couple of years, and when you kind of think back on it, how do you define this team? Like, I think I cover this team. I know I cover this team, but I think I know a lot about this team as much as almost anybody who covers the team. And I don't know how to define it. Like, it hasn't been bad necessarily, but ever since 41-41, ever since Dwayne's departure in 2016 and Chris's health issues that same year, like, how is it that you can define this team? Like, I don't know that there was a clear identity. It was overachieving and underachieving at the same time, some talent but not talented enough, hardworking but disappointing at the same time. Like, all these things have played out pretty regularly, and so it's kind of hard to identify what we've seen over the last three seasons. I want that stripped. I want a new team that we go, that is a team of badass mother effers that goes and just messes your shit up. I want them to be more like 90s style of Heat basketball, where they just have an identity as being a defensive-minded group that will get in your face, talk shit, just make you uncomfortable, and make you regret wanting to or playing them. You know, like, I when Miami travels to other teams around the country, I want them to be like, oh, damn, we got to go through some work tonight. When it's a mid-January game and it's a brutal winter out there, I don't want it getting any warmer inside for these opponents. I want them to be brash. I want them to be tough. I want them to play with conviction, something that we have not seen over the last few years. I want people scared of this group. And I think that's one identity, but at the very least, I think it's the one that's most likely. I want them to be a bunch of, I'll say, badass motherfuckers. I want them to scare people. And, I'm not sure that we're going to get it, but I think we're starting to see signs there. Like, if we can get a version of Justice that we saw a couple seasons ago in the playoffs, if we can get Jimmy at his worst as far as opponents are concerned, you know, if we can get a rise out of players from Bam Adebayo, et cetera, then I think you're going to start to see a group that can be really tough and fun to watch. And another thing that I'd like to see as far as what would make this a very successful season is a push for all-star status from either Justice or Bam. And I think that's important, because how you view this team is dependent on, again, just Jimmy and a bunch of scrubs, or Jimmy and some guys that with unrealized potential. I want Justice in particular, because I think there's still room for Bam to take a leap. But either way, either one of them, to be honest with you, for them to just have moments, defining moments, where you can look back and go, this is a player that we'll remember throughout Heat history. Like I want a big game from him, a defining game. I don't know that we've seen that from either of those players. And maybe it's early. Obviously, Bam's still young. But we had these things from Dwayne when he entered the league. And maybe, you know, that was an incredibly high barometer that we shouldn't place above other young players. But at the same time, you have high expectations. And you should, because I think, you know, there were both lottery picks. And I want to see those kind of moments where we see something special out of Justice, where he has a huge game that just contributes to winning plays. You know, I want to see Bam have an explosive game. You know, I think we started to see potential of that last year. When he started getting more opportunities with Hassan Whiteside being hurt, and I think now with Whiteside gone, I think you're going to see some chance of Bam having those really, really special games where you can just go, wow, that was a great game. Remember the Adebayo game where he had blankly bag points, you know, something like that. That would be fun to watch. Hey, it could come from Tyler Hero too. I mean, we saw it from Kendrick Nunn in the preseason. 40 points is fun and all that, but it's still Kendrick Nunn. I don't know that he's going to have a huge impact on this season or this team. I think, if anything, you're better pinning those hopes on Justice or Bam, and maybe to some extent Tyler Hero. But that's it. Those are what I think would be a successful season for Miami. Coming up next, what are the things that I want to see for this season. I'll tell you all about it in the next segment. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Remember to listen to and subscribe to new and archived episodes of Locked On Heat on Himalaya, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're on iTunes, please leave a rating and review, especially if it's a good one. You know, just personal things that I want to see out of the team. Like, I want to see individual stories play out. And one of the ones that I wanted to see play out, well, it seems like it's very, very unlikely that it's going to happen, because that was the story, the redemption story of Dion Waiters. As of this recording, nothing's been resolved. He's working out with a team. They haven't really said anything. They're not going to address the situation. They're not going to address his stupid comments on Instagram. And I understand where he's coming from, because I know that he's worked hard to get to this point, and he wanted the opportunity to prove himself and to play. But I can't help but think that he's gone about this the wrong way. And I want to see some resolution. Like for Dion, there's a lack of self-awareness there. He is, if not quite a running joke around the league, I don't think he is a player that is taken seriously. Certainly not by front offices. Probably not from most media. It's almost like when you say you're on Waiters Island, you're kind of saying it almost in a joking way. But I really do believe in Dion. Like, I mean, he's been through a lot. And I think these are important storylines to consider. Like, these are human beings that have been through incredible issues. And to get to this point, to be one of the 450 best basketball players in the world, is something really, really special. And we should appreciate them because they were able to accomplish this. It's far too easy for us to just trash them based on a bad game or a bad season or even a bad career when they are, you know, quote-unquote busts. You know, Justice Winslow, we talked about him struggling for the first few years of his career. He was injured in his second season. A lot of people called him Bustus. I personally never thought he was going to be a great player either. I wasn't sure if he was ever going to take that leap. And he's admitted over the summer that those comments took a lot out of him. It really affected him. And we start to forget how important it is for these players to be appreciated, because they're human beings. And we shouldn't. You know, it's far too easy in this world where you can make comments about people on the internet. You could say whatever the hell you want to about somebody, and there are no ramifications whatsoever. Similarly, when it comes to our athletes, you can yell at them from a crowd of 14,000, 17,000 people, and it's just one jerk yelling into the masses, and no one knows where this is coming from. And there's no way for these players to interact without there being a huge black eye, a huge, you know, sore spot for the league. The last time it happened was the Malice at the Palace a few years ago, and I don't know that anybody wants a replay of that situation. But for Dion, I was hoping that he was turning it around, because I didn't want his career to be a joke. I wanted him to show that he was capable of bouncing back, of understanding what it took, and he took some major steps by losing the weight, by understanding that there was room for him to change and grow, and he took those steps, and then he still kind of took a step backward, at least in the view of the front office, and that's a shame, because I did not want that to be the case. I wanted him to be able to embrace a role, to be able to be a guy that fans around the league could appreciate because he was injured and because now he's back, to kind of look at that cocky swag and say, you know what, that's all good. It's fun. It's fun to watch Dion when he's at his best and playing at a high level. And unfortunately, it just doesn't seem like that's likely to happen. I'm hoping for a resolution, a swift resolution. I just don't know how it's going to play out unless there are really open lines of communication between Eric Spoelstra, the front office, and Dion, where he talks about what he's feeling and where he understands that he can't just say, I want to play. You got to go out there and do things differently. Or, you know what, even if Eric Spoelstra says you're going to play, you're just going to play 25 minutes coming off the bench, then Dion still should embrace that. He really should. And I think it's for his own best interest. But speaking of which, another player that I would really like to see a positive storyline from is Goran. And that's the player who has embraced that role. And I think it's just one of the things that really stood out to me was talking recently with Sean Woodley of Locked On Raptors. And he explained to me that Goran was actually reviled by Raptors fans, that they really hate Goran Dragic. and he wasn't quite sure what where it stemmed from. I know he got into some kind of altercation with Kyle Lowry at some point, and maybe DeMar DeRozan to another game there. But I was looking at we've been watching Goran Dragic now for what, 4 or 5 seasons. This is going to be his 5th season with the team, and that guy has been nothing but fun. I mean, say that he's not an all-star, or maybe he got that all-star selection for dubious reasons. Say that he's not a superstar. Say that whatever, he's over the hill. You probably shouldn't say any of those things, but at least there might be some vein of legitimacy to those kind of comments. But I've never seen him be a jerk. He's aggressive. He likes to play at a hard level. He's physical when he needs to be. But the reality, he's turned into a very solid defender over the course of his career. He still plays hard. And the fact that he's coming off the bench, when he could have done this very differently. You know, he's talked about it. He has an ego. He understands what's at stake here. He knows that he's the last year of his contract. And if he doesn't prove it now, he might not get another contract. And maybe that's the worst case scenario. But the reality is, at 34, with lingering knee issues and not nearly as explosive as he once was. And so for Goran, I don't know that he's going to be able to make a lot of money as a free agent. And if not, then, you know, his season is vital for him prolonging his NBA career. Otherwise, he's just stringing together veteran minimum deals from team to team, you know, where he's kind of fighting for a championship or for happiness. You know, I could see a reunion tour with the Phoenix Suns, things of that sort. I mean, I don't want to see that unceremonious end to Goran's career, and I think this is a really good opportunity for him to show people around the country that he's a really good player, that he is actually a solid role player that just plays hard, and you know, that could even warrant some Sixth Man of the Year consideration, and I think that's important. And that would change a lot about the view of Goran, because I think he is a pretty good guy and somebody, again, that I enjoy talking to personally over the course of my career covering him. And I think it would mean a lot to me to see him change that narrative and to be appreciated for embracing a role that Deion, up to this point, does not seem willing to embrace. So the last thing that I think would make this season a really, really fun one thing that I really want to see, another thing that I really want to see, is games that just go down to the wire, where Jimmy or someone else wins it all. Like, look at the last few seasons. Look at the last season in particular. What game stood out the most? I think it's pretty clear. And I think that's Dwayne's game winner over Golden State. I can't remember much else about last season, even having podcasted after 82 regular season games. You know, I stayed up late to watch games in Portland and Denver and against the Clippers and everything else. And the game that really stood out the most is a win against the Golden State Warriors, where he just hit that bank shot to win it all. And those kinds of things really stand out. And I think with a guy like Jimmy now, you're going to see a lot more moments like that. And that's what I'm really looking forward to, is seeing him come through in clutch situations where he knocks those shots down, because those are the memorable moments that you really want. You just want those kinds of moments. A career turns into a nebulous cloud of events, but the moments, those are the ones that really stand out as far as your views of a player. Like, I mean, even who remembers a Michael Jordan 40-point game in February or March that didn't mean anything? Now, you remember shots in the playoff. You remember him pushing off of Byron Russell or leaping over Craig Elo, etc. These are the things that really stand out. And when you're looking at a career, and so I want those kind of defining moments for Jimmy or for somebody on this team, because those are really fun. I want somebody, maybe it's Goran, maybe it's Justice, maybe it's Bam, somebody that we haven't seen knock down those winning shots. I'd say Deion, but we have seen that from him, and I don't know what's going to happen with his future in the team again, but I want those kind of winning moments, because even those are fun. Look, to go back, Deion, I think we can appreciate Deion. If anybody still has any optimism out there as far as Deion's tenure in Miami, and I think there's very, very few of us left, it's because of those moments that we saw from him in 2016-17, where he hit those game winners against Golden State and Brooklyn, where he just looked like a guy who was ready to take a leap in his career. And unfortunately, that never played out the way it should have. So let's go back to seeing and appreciating very, very special moments at the end of games, because those are going to stick with us for a long, long time. And that's what's going to make this season one of the most memorable in Heat history. I'll be back later on tonight with a recap of the Memphis matchup, but that's it for today. You can connect with me on Twitter using the hashtag AskAlloHeat, or email me at lockdownheat@gmail.com. I'm David Ramil, signing off and thanking you, as always, for your support.
Wrap it up, B.